Deuteronomy chapter 22 and verses 1 to 12.
You shall not watch your neighbour's ox or sheep straying away and ignore them. You shall take them back to their owner. If the owner does not reside near you, or you do not know who the owner is, you shall bring it into your house, and it will remain with you until the owner claims it, and then you shall return it. You shall do the same with the neighbour's donkey, and you'll do the same with your neighbour's garment, and you'll do the same with anything else that your neighbour loses and you find. You shall not withhold your help. You shall not see your neighbour's donkey or ox fallen on the road and ignore it. You shall help it to lift it up. A woman shall not wear a man's apparel, and nor shall a man put on a woman's garment, for whoever does such things is abhorrent to the Lord your God. If you come on a bird's nest in any tree or on the ground with fledglings or eggs, with a mother sitting on the fledglings or on the eggs, you shall not take the mother with the young. Let the mother go, taking only the young for yourself, in order that it may go well with you and you may live long. When you build a new house, you will make a parapet for your roof. Otherwise, you might have blood guilt on your house if anyone should fall from it. You shall not sow your vineyard with a second kind of seed, or the whole yield will have to be forfeited, both the crop that you have sown and the yield of the vineyard itself. You shall not plough with an ox and a donkey yoked together. You shall not wear clothes made of wool and linen woven together. You shall make tassels on the four corners of the cloak which you cover yourself.
In the last few chapters of Deuteronomy, what Moses has been doing is been reminding and warning the Israelites about practices that are going to break this covenant agreement with God that provides them with the land. So Moses looks ahead, he recognises there are potential problems ahead, and he's looking back to the law that he gave in Exodus and expounded upon in Leviticus. He's looking back to that and saying, you know, if we look at the things in there are great risks. If we break these laws, the covenant will be broken, we will lose the land. And it's interesting, it's relevant to our passage, that what Moses warned the people about in Leviticus 18:28 and in Leviticus 20 verse 22, he uses quite graphic language, and he says, you know, if you do these things which are against God's laws and against God's rules in his land, then what's going to happen is the land's going to vomit you up, just like it vomited up, spewed up every corrupt and abhorrent people and contaminated people that went before. This is repulsive. The very land views these acts as repulsive. And what Moses has been doing so far in Deuteronomy has been talking about practices like bloodshed and like idolatry that would contaminate the land and ultimately result in their ejection from it. And what's happening in our passage is Moses is actually continuing with this theme. So you get a sense of that if you look down at verse 7 and 8, because there he mentions words and phrases we've seen several times before, but talking about ensuring you live a long life. And talking about bloodshed. And what you can see is this is part of a sermon that Moses has been presenting, and this particular part of the sermon is going to continue all the way through to chapter 26. So he's been picking up these laws from Exodus and Leviticus, and he's been taking those laws which applied to a nomadic situation where the people were living in tents and they were constantly on the move through various lands on the way to the promised land. And what Moses is doing is he's showing how they're going to apply these laws once they're settled, once they're in houses, once they're established in a land, they're no longer on the move, no longer living in tents. Now, I said this is a sermon, and right at the very beginning, early in Deuteronomy, well, there were some exciting things, and you can imagine the people all sat around there listening, the families listening to Moses, and they're talking of giants, and they're talking of great battles and victories won, and you can imagine people be really excited. But about this stage now, I suspect the sermon's dragging a bit. It's getting quite tough. And in fact, verse 12 makes me smile, because when you look at it, when I look at it, each time I look at it now, it just seems even Moses is bored of going over these old laws. So it's almost as though in verse 12 Moses is saying, oh yeah, there was this law about tassels. Loads of stuff in there about tassels. Where are your tassels? It seems no explanation, but it just seems though even Moses is getting a little bit tired. And in fact, it's quite funny because in my Bibles, the title for this section is Various Laws. Nothing else to say about it. A weird hodgepodge collection of different things. There's all sorts of random weird things in our passage. There's cross-dressing, there's birds' nests, there's house building, there's intercropping and ploughing, there's material science and tassels, trims for gardens. So a weird collection of stuff. But it's worth spending a little time thinking about some of the literary tricks that Moses is using and some of the translation issues, because if it is just a hodgepodge variation of different laws, and all it is just various laws, we can skip over it, forget about it. There's nothing in it for us. But as we've discovered already, there's actually lots for us to learn from these things. And so what Moses does is he gets this passage, and you can imagine he's droning on a little bit, and then he shocks his audience into paying attention. The laws that he's talking about are all laws that they've heard hundreds of times before. You can imagine the people sat there and, oh, yeah. Our parents have been drilling these laws into us for the last 40 years, as they were told us to. Ever since we first received them from Sinai, they've been pressed upon us, pressed upon our children. They've been saying them when we go out and when we come in. We've heard them to the nth degree. But all of a sudden, Moses speaks. Oh, it catches their attention, because Moses has changed the law again. So at the start of it, Moses is referring back to Exodus chapter 23 and verses 4 and 5. And that original set of laws that came down from Sinai and Moses communicated to the people. What it says there, it says, if you come across your enemy's ox or donkey wandering off, be sure to take it back to him. And if you see the donkey of someone who hates you fallen down under its load, don't leave it there. Be sure to help him with it. So it's all about your enemies and those who hate you. You've got to make sure you do your duty to them. But here in this passage, all of a sudden Moses is changing up and saying, if you see your brother's ox straying, or if you see your brother's donkey falling down, he's switched it. It's no longer about enemies. And this is like it's a radical shift. If you've memorized these scriptures and then all of a sudden somebody's saying something completely different, it's quite unnerving and upsetting. Now the old laws about your enemies and stuff and looking after their property might make sense when you were a bunch of nomads and you were travelling through enemy territory. And you wouldn't want to do anything to upset those enemies unnecessarily as you're going through. So you don't want to give the impression to them that you're raiding their livestock. They've lost their livestock, all of a sudden they stumble across you and your party, and you've gathered all of their donkeys and ox to themselves, and you don't want to give any semblance of that. So the instruction will make sense. Yeah, if you find one of your enemy's oxes or donkeys, you take it back to them. You find out who they are, take it back to them. You're going to live at peace. And the other part could be about, effectively they're being hospitable to you by allowing you to travel through their land to take the wild fruit and the grain and the stuff and use their pastures for grazing your flocks. But effectively what he's saying is you shouldn't refuse help to them. When they need it, their donkey or their ox is struggling under a load, then you don't leave them to it, because that's an abuse of their hospitality. They're helping you, make sure you help them. So those sorts of things would make sense to us. So now that we're settled or going to be settled in this new land, well, there aren't any enemies there that we really need to think about. They should have all have gone. And then what you might imagine, if people are going to stick to the letter of the law, you might imagine them turning around and responding and saying, oh, well, finders keepers. It's time for this to come into play. And you might think that you would do that. You might be justified in that, because surely if you're a neighbour, they're settled in this land, they've got their property. If they haven't built fences properly, or if they're not looking after their livestock or anything properly, then it would, you might turn around and say, well, serves them right. They've lost it. I'm going to claim it. Finders keepers. I'll keep it for myself. But Moses is having none of that. No, he says, turn around here, and in the start of this, in verse 3, he's saying, this courtesy that you extended to your enemies, you're going to extend this to your brothers and sisters as well. And not only livestock, we're not just talking about livestock here, verse 3, his cloak, or anything else that belongs to your brother. If he loses any of it, you look after it, and you make sure it's returned back to him. These are rules that were laid out back there in Exodus. It's not just about travelling safely through foreign countries. There's a fundamental principle that underpins these rules. They're here for a reason. The actual laws that I gave you then, they're like circus dress, and you follow those and you're going to be somewhere to keep in what lies underneath it. But so this same principle is there. It's what's right and it's what's fair. What we might do is we might put it in like modern words, and you might say something like, If something belongs to somebody else, it's still theirs, even if circumstances have taken it away from them temporarily. And this is only reasonable and fair. So you can see what Moses has done, but all of a sudden now, this congregation are having to start to think about what's being said. Because the rules have changed. They've got to think about, okay, that's what it said then. This is what it says now. What does that mean to us and about our general behaviour? So their attention's been grabbed. And what Moses also does, he makes a dramatic literary shift. We don't see it in our Bibles. Broody probably does see it, if you look closely in his King James version. Because in the King James, you've kept all the these and thous and thines and yees and yours. And basically what Moses has done is he makes this dramatic shift, which is really obvious. All the way through his sermon so far, he's been talking about you, the people. Israel in general, all of you out there, all of you now need to listen to these rules. That's how he's been speaking so far, and he will do. And when we get to verse 13 onwards, he's going to be talking about plural pronouns. He's going to be talking about you, the people. But here in these 12 verses, Moses makes a radical shift. What he does is, it's no longer about you, the people, it's about you, Seth. It's about you, Dawn. It's about you as an individual, what part you're going to play in this new kingdom. About how your individual behaviour affects the nation. How your individual behaviour affects the security of the land. There's no more hiding amongst this mass of people or hiding under the state's rules. Because the fate of the nation, Moses is saying, is not dependent on the leaders. It's not dependent on the government. It's down to you as individuals to play your part. Now we can see how this can make a difference. If we look to verses 5 to 7, we have a phrase in English, or we used to have a phrase in English. I think it might be being lost these days. We used to have a phrase that goes like this: an Englishman's home is his castle. Or another phrase might be, I don't care what people get up to in the privacy of their own homes. That's up to them. Many of you have heard those sorts of things before. And the general idea of those is that an Englishman ought to be able to set his own rules in his own castle. He's the lord of his own domain. What he chooses to do is down to him. But Moses is having none of that. He's not having none of that. Moses is introducing a rules-based order. Lists of rules, and Moses is saying what you do in the privacy of your own home has a direct impact on what happens in the nation. God doesn't want cross-dressing in his land. In God's land, there's got to be no part of it. In verse 6, effectively what's being said then, how you respond personally to your environment has a direct effect on your own life, on your own future. If you're going to go out and destroy whole families of birds when you've stumbled across them by accident, then that destruction is going to have consequences. You need to be thinking about what you're doing. You need to think about the environment, thinking about the future. And in verse 7, again, when you're building your own home, you've got to consider others. You've got to consider those people that are using it or might be passing by it. You can't offset your culpability, your guilt, by saying, oh, it's their own stupid fault. So under this system, you can't do that. If there's a death on your property, then there's a blood guilt that has to be paid. We saw that in the last chapter. And the blood guilt, Moses says, falls on the householder. Whoever built that property, it's their responsibility. If somebody dies on their property, it's down to the householder. So all we can see, I think, is we can start to see a pattern emerging in this paragraph. What Moses is doing is saying that we have to take personal responsibility. You have to take responsibility for your neighbour's livestock and for their property. You need to recognise that your own private acts have public consequences. You need to take responsibility. You personally need to take responsibility for the natural environment, for the built environment. Nothing you do is ever truly done in isolation. What that does is it helps us a little bit as we look for the next few verses, verses 9 to 11. And as you look at those verses, and as you think about what's being said there, you can see that Moses is saying something about mixtures, about swapping things about. So in verse 9, Moses specifically states that producing mixed cropping, having two different types of plants growing together, means that both of them could end up being defiled. that sets a scene. There's something about this mixing which causes a corruption. In verse 10, as we think about that, the ox and the donkey yoked together to try and plough the field, we can see, pretty obviously, how two very different animals with very different strengths might end up damaging each other. So the ox having to bear the burden all on its own because the donkey's too weak and it's twisting as it's walking the whole time. You can see how that can weaken the ox. You can also see the poor old donkey trekking along, trying to keep up with this ox beside it, pulling this great weight. The donkey's not built for that sort of behaviour. Carries stuff on his back, yeah, but not for ploughing the field alongside an ox. So you can see how it would make sense and how both could be damaged by this sort of mixing. And in verse 11, anyone who's washed a woolly jumper on the wrong setting can get an idea of what's going on here. And mixing wool and linen together is going to end up producing an unstable cloth. They didn't have hot washing machines in those days, but you've still got the same things, or the wool tying and the linen knot, and end up with something really unusable. And it's interesting because Moses doesn't bother explaining the reasons for these rules here. You should already know them. But in fact, as you think about the rules, and this is what Moses is trying to get the people to do, to think about what's being said. As you think about it, you realise that there's actually something much deeper going on. It's just a few moments of thought would help. When we think about it, say these vines, and you've got these grapes growing on the little vine bushes, and then you think about these crops on the ground, maybe it's wheat, or maybe it's some root crop on the ground, you might think straight away, well, what difference is that going to make? Really, the vine's roots are deep, and a few crops are not going to affect it, and you can harvest them separately, and then different lines. So what's the problem here? And the problem, if you spend any time thinking about it and meditating in it, is on the third day of creation, God said, God created plants. Plants bearing seed according to their kinds, and trees bearing fruit with seed in it according to their kinds. And God saw that that order and that arrangement was good. He declared it good. We might think we know better, and we can mix our crops and put our fruit and our seeds together, but that's going against God's order. So he's got a reason for it, which maybe we don't understand. And about the livestock, the ox and the donkeys, yeah, it makes common sense, but again, we remember on the sixth day of creation, God made the livestock according to their kinds. They've got roles, and they've got purposes, they've got strengths, they've got things they can do that other things cannot do, and mixing them together to try and get them to perform the same task is, again, it's a corruption of this order. And continue down the list, you can also think that God also set other orders in society, other distinctions, just like these were separated into different species according to their kind, or into different plants according to their kind. When God introduced the tabernacle to the people just 4 years before, he made a distinction then between the common and between the sacred. So we can see then the sanctuary was separated from the people by barriers. And there are a whole load of rules in there. So the anointing oils and the fragrant oils and the incense, specific recipes were given. And the instructions said, don't take those recipes and use them for perfume at home. They're not for the ordinary people to use. These are for these sacred ceremonies. And so there's this idea of mixing and blending, of mixing the sacred and the ordinary. It's sort of a cupboard here as well. And what we can also do is we can think about verse 5, about this cross-dressing or transvestites. I'm going to explain a little bit more about this. But what we can see is that in this passage then, as we look at it, this isn't so much about sexual deviancy. That's what's not going on here. But it's more about blurring the difference between the sections, about corruption of gender roles, which again were established back in Genesis. In Genesis 1:27, God created man in his own image. In the image of God he created them, he created them male and female. He created them. There's that same distinction between men and women as there were between the different species, between the different seed, between the fruit-bearing trees. Now, there's been a lot of study, especially in recent days, in the current climate, in the verse 5 of chapter 22. In fact, there's an ancient study, because Augustine and Jerome, who wrote the Latin Vulgate, the Roman Catholic Bible, were arguing about this verse in the Old Testament. Augustine said, we need to stick with one version of the Bible, because Jerome, you're watering down this verse by going back to the original Hebrew. And there was a lot of discussion about this, and that's continued to this day. But there's a few things about verse 5 which I think is worth pointing out, because we know gender issues and cross-dressing and stuff are big issues today. And we've got to think about what our Christian's response should be to that. The first thing we can learn as we think about verse 5 is that Moses actually uses two different words for clothing. So if you're in your NIV, it's the same word. You can't see any difference. The King James picks it up a little bit better. But basically, if I was going to put it in Jonathan Gibson's translation of verse 5, then what it says is that women should not put on men's stuff. Shouldn't put on men's stuff. And men shouldn't put on things that make them look like women. So our outer garments. So men's stuff is things like armour, but also jewellery and underwear and clothing that's made specifically for men. So that's men's stuff. But the women's stuff tends to relate to like a cloak or the outer garment, the outer appearance that puts it on. So there's a distinction there. And effectively what this is saying is that that men have things that are made for their roles, so they can perform their roles as men. And women shouldn't be going and taking those upon themselves. And in the same way that men, they have their roles and their responsibilities, but it's still not right for them to just go and to dress up as women. And they should just be looking like women. It's also worth thinking about, in this verse, about Moses' description of God's reaction to this cross-dressing. Now, the NIV, if you looked in that one, it said God detests cross-dressing. In Dawn's version, she read, it says God finds it abhorrent. In the ESVs and the NIV, I know the ESVs and most of the others, it says it's an abomination. I think the King James says it's an abomination. So there's these words here about what God's reaction to it is. Now, the original Hebrew means it crosses a line. Or we might say in modern phrase, it's out of order. So that's what it means. And it's interesting. It's like the game. In the old days, we used to call it Chinese whispers. I think we call it the telephone game these days. And what we can see is from the original Hebrew, through its translation into the Septuagint, and then through Jerome and Augustine, and then through the modern translations, and then through the Normans and their influence on the land, what's happened is this word has been transformed from just being something that's out of line and out of order into something that is abominable. Abominable, the root of the word is against omens. It's evil, this practice. And abhorrence, which was in Dawn's Bible, that's abhorrent. It's against man. It's inhuman. And so in our modern words, in our modern translations, what we've done is we've taken something which is just out of line and breaks the rules into something that is evil and inhuman and fills people with disgust and repulses them. And I'd offer a little challenge to you that as you think about some of the practices that you see, you know, the land was ready to vomit people up, but God's attitude wasn't quite the same as that. It's not that same of revolt, level of revulsion and sickness. It's out of order and it's out of line, but it's not, doesn't meet the extremeness of a lot of other things. So for example, if we think about these verses here, if we think about sexual deviance, as we look through Deuteronomy, as we'll see in the next few chapters, is that sexual deviancy, what happens is you put people to death. You know, it's worthy of a death sentence. If it's something that is abominable, it's something that's evil and something that's pagan, then again, that's pursued with a death sentence. But here in our passage, there's no mention of death sentence. There's no mention of throwing people out of the community. But it's definitely, it's out of line and it's out of order. And it's not something for God. You should have no place amongst God's people. Now, it's been argued in verse 5 that what Moses is actually doing was just preaching against pagan practices. Because in the Canaanite temples of those days, the worship of Astarte, the worship of Asherah, they were goddesses of chaos, and they were also goddesses of fertility. So the idea is they maintained order, and all the worship practices had people, priests, cross-dressing to show this confusion and this disorder. But what's happened is God has brought in order, and effectively that's what Moses is alluding to here. It's also interesting to note, just as a mention, that there isn't actually any sexual or erotic link here. Again, because there's no death sentence. It's not like the other sexual crimes. It's in this different section to the other sexual practices. And in fact, again, the idea of this word abomination or abhorrence or detestable, we can actually see that same word used in Genesis 43:32. Some of you remember or have heard that the Egyptians refused to eat with the Israelites because it was abominable. because it was abhorrent, because it was detestable. But there wasn't anything repulsive about eating with the Israelites. What was happening is a boundary was being crossed. Egyptians were the masters. Hebrews were the slaves. You didn't share meals together because it crossed those class boundaries. So, as we think about this then, and as we try and hold these thoughts together, what Moses is doing is he's showing in our passage that individuals, they need to take personal responsibility for the fate of their nation. They might be only small cogs in the wheel, but what they do in the privacy of their own homes, what they do when they're alone, what they do when they're in isolation, it affects the whole. Even small, insignificant, outdated rules should still be held to. Even if it seems as though they're not relevant for your current situation, there are principles underlying it that need to be looked at and considered. And the reason is because God created order out of chaos. And that order that God created and said was good ought to be maintained. Because God's all wise and he needs to know what's the best. And even if we disagree with it, we ought to be listening to it. And so Moses reminds the people in verse 12, keep wearing those tassels. Now, if we went back to Numbers 15, verses 37 to 41, we can see what that's all really about. You can turn back there if you want, but basically the long and short of it is, Israelites, you're called to be different. You're called to be set apart. Wearing those tassels makes you stand out. Other people can see and know that you're different. You're to wear those tassels to show other people that you are the people of God. You're to wear those tassels to remind yourselves that he is your God. We do all of these weird things, Moses is saying, to make yourself stand out, to make it really obvious to the nations round about you. You follow a different set of rules because you are God's people and you're following his order. So that might have been interesting and useful to the Israelites, so what of us today? What relevance does this have to us today? Should we be starting to wear tassels? Have we been set free to follow the modern trend and start cross-dressing? Paul shows us how to manage this in 2 Corinthians 6:14. What Paul does, he refers to verse 10 of our passage. Do not be yoked together with unbelievers. Don't yoke the ox and the donkey together. And what Paul does in 2 Corinthians there, he's talking about relationships. He's talking about marriages. He's talking about business partnerships. And he says for Christians, it's just like yoking an ox and a donkey together. Whether you're the strong ox or you're the smaller donkey, both can suffer if that yoking is unreasonable, if believers have a yoking with unbelievers. And so what Paul's doing is just like Moses has done in that passage. He says there are some underlying principles that need to be taken into account. There is an order in creation. There is an order in the spiritual and the natural. They're separated, and that division shouldn't be violated. So today, do we need physical signs like tassels or crucifixes to show our devotion to God? Some people think they're really useful, and it can be a really useful sign, and people have fought the cases for the cause to wear their crosses in the NHS. But Jesus seems to say, Matthew 5:16, that actually it's much more about your behaviour that makes you stand out. Let your light shine before men so they can see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. And so the message, I think, of this passage is that remember who you are. And whether you're dealing with enemies or whether you're dealing with brothers, your attitudes and your behaviours should demonstrate that you are God's people. That you're respecting God's choices. That you're respecting God's order. That you're living lives that are distinct and different to everyone round about you. What's important is that you are recognised as being distinctly holy, as being God's people. Amen.